All right, folks. Let me call this meeting of the Little Cabinet River Basin Development Commission to order. Please set your cell phones on stun and let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Lambert, we call roll, please.
Tom Dunkey.
Here.
Tom Godwin.
Here.
Anthony Rodnick, absent. Jared Nimitz.
Here.
Dave Castellanos.
Here.
Ron Ware.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. Moving right along, approval of the minutes from December 12th and December 19th. Is that right? Modifications, motions, questions, what say you?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve the minutes from the meetings of December 12th and December 19th, 2018.
Second. Motion and a second. All those, any discussion? Jeez. All right, be there none. All those approved, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, Happy New Year, everybody. I hope you had a great holiday. We're here to make sure something like the pictures on that board never happened, at least as we draw a breath, but a $275 million man-made project needs maintenance. And if, like anything else in the man-made scenario, if you don't do the maintenance, things tend to fail. We're a lot better prepared today than we were prior to the events of September 2008. However, this is a project that has to deal with Mother Nature, and in the end game, in she wins. But if we end up getting 10 gallons of water in our 5-gallon bucket, we're going to have some challenges. Dan meets with all the municipalities along the watershed to make sure that we have those plans ready to go and have a process in place to be able to make sure we do the best we can and try to take care of those 10 gallons. As that board gets more and more yellow, and the edges start to curl up more and more, less and less of it is focused on what happens if you don't do it correctly, and it's all focused about the money, and how come some people are not getting more and more of it. First and foremost, this is going to be to make sure that doesn't happen again, at least as long as I'm involved. But in the same time, we're going to try to make this a better place and help draw the community together and show that there is a way in the region to be able to work together for the overall benefit of everybody. That's enough for me. Finance report. We need approval of the claims for January 2019. I've learned that we need a motion before we can talk about that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion we approve the claims for January 2019 in the amount of $206,275.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Dan, it's light. So it was a holiday or something?
It was a holiday since December 19th, which was our last meeting. It's the winter time. There's holidays, so very limited billing, which is not a bad thing. A couple of the larger ones for DLZ for the overseeing of the Kennedy Avenue Bridge engineering for $23,000. IHC Construction Company, which is doing the bridge over Deep River, the railroad bridge, for $62,420. Ellis Construction in the amount of $36,539 for Harrison Construction. We had some title work done on properties that we either need to acquire because of the Corps' direction, which Griffith Golf Center and a couple other ones, and some properties that we're looking to acquire to assist us with the levee that we're going to design currently and build, hopefully, in 2020 out in Lake Station. Other than that, we have our typical NIPSCO bills for our pump stations that we own, and that's it.
All right, gentlemen, any questions for Mr. Repay as it relates to the bills that he can't answer in his executive director's report or what's happening elsewhere? There's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Quincy.
Yes.
Tom Gassetti.
Yes.
Jared Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Paying the bills, yes. Next up, Mr. Repay, Executive Director's Report.
Okay, thank you. As you had mentioned, we meet with the municipalities monthly, and this month was a bigger opportunity and something that we planned for a couple months, which was our tabletop exercise, which is an exercise stating that if X happens, if we had an overtopping in a certain location, how do we evacuate? How do we notify? Where do they go? How do we double check? How do we, you know, we use the example of the fires out in California where entire communities get wiped off and make sure that everyone's accounted for. So we had a great attendance today. Natalie was there, saw her this morning. Now I get to see her again, along with several members of the Army Corps that helped with the emergency response as well as levee safety. We had Lake County Emergency Management. We had Homeland Security. We had District 1 Homeland Security. All communities otherwise were represented, as well as some private entities, ambulance companies, just so we have a good idea of a better idea of how to do it. And it's better to test it when it's indoors and not necessarily when you're in the heat of the moment. And one of the things that we really learned a lot about was the advancements in the 911 center and how they can notify people. Everyone's used to reverse 911 or Nixle. This one is called RAGE. It should be online here by the end of February, which will allow us to draw a box around a certain area to warn them of any effects, flood warnings, whatever it may be, whether it's a voluntary evacuation or just to let them know that there's a flood warning in sight. We can have those boxes already predetermined, so once the event happens, we just plug box one, and box one gets the notification so that we're not dealing with that type of situation. What interesting fact was that only 12% of, I think, if I understood the factors correct, 12% of the population in Lake County have landlines, or landlines that are considered home phones, not just landlines for your computer. So what this box will allow us to do is, even if you're driving from out of the state or out of the area and you're within this box, you will be notified on your cell phone, sort of when you get those Amber alerts or anything like that, and you will be notified. So if you're not familiar with the area, but you are in the area that will be affected, you will get that notification. So that was a two-hour exercise. We learned some things, and we're going to go over some things at a later meeting. It was Bill Rochford's last O&M meeting for 6 months before he gets shipped off to D.C. for a special assignment. So that was his last opportunity to be here, but it was a good exercise, something that we planned on, something that's that we're going to learn from, and then hopefully, you know, unlike last year, we don't have those the snow melt. What was it, February 10th or 11th? And we have to put it into practice. But beyond that, other things that we worked on a little bit, as I've said before, the natural spring testing we've submitted to IDEM for that. The natural spring off of 35th. Since it's a sort of now become a public waterway, we are going to test it on a quarterly basis to make sure that that water is safe. The mitigation projects are all sort of been slowed by the holidays as well. The Clark Road adjustment is complete, but for the planting of the grass, Harrison Avenue Bridge has restarted now that NIPSCO has reworked their lines. Hobart Railroad Bridge, which is took a little bit of a break because of some surveying issues and some issues that the railroad wanted to look at further as far as the design, is now back up and running effective tomorrow. Lake Station Levee agreement with Patrick has been signed, and they're starting to work on the design as well, so that we make sure that those 280 or so houses that are located to the, let's see, would that be to the east of Deep River, are situated. We'll continue to work with the Autobahn and of the Midwest with that agreement to enhance the wetlands located near Martin Luther King and Clark Street. And as far as that is concerned, all those projects, that's what we've really been working on. Kennedy Avenue, as you know, came back at the 19th meeting. It was a little bit higher than what we were expecting. We'll be addressing that, and I'll probably be addressing that in some further explanation. But we were working on redoing some design issues that may be able to save us some money. I mean, if you want me to go through Project Tracker, but Project Tracker is very similar. Everything has sort of been on a slow pace with the holidays, so nothing really too much has advanced beyond what I've already discussed with those projects that I initially went through.
Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Any questions for Mr. Repay? No? All right, moving right along. Mrs. Mills, United States Army Corps of Engineers. How are you? Happy New Year.
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you. Happy New Year to everyone here. I hope you all had a great holiday season. I don't have much to report. I'm going to give a quick update on Hobart Marsh mitigation, work they've completed within the last month. There's some clearing work, and then they're going to also be doing some additional clearing. No modifications pending on this one. The in-project mitigation works in the last 2 weeks. They planted some oak trees, and they have no work planned within the next 2 weeks. They're pretty much going to be done for the season, except they will be doing some girdling, not on any set schedule, just as needed. As far as the, you all mentioned the wall, and you remember last February, it was the leaking wall in Munster. We applied for the assistance from Division. We did receive approval, and we're just waiting for the money to actually arrive to us, and then we can lay out our schedule. I'm hoping to have us working in the spring so we can get this done by the summertime. So as I get the money and we lay out the schedule, I'll keep you all informed of where we are with the processes.
Gentlemen, anything for Mrs. Mills?
Yes, I have a question. Mrs. Mills, first of all, Happy New Year to you. In our recent executive meeting, we had some discussions regards to developers who are approaching the commission regarding to putting up facilities. And the question that comes up is the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers can claim the land at any time, even though a building is put up and money's been spent. And I just want to know, what is the process of procedure for you to take eminent domain or for you to take acquisition of a piece of property or land? And I think I'd like to know that, and I think the developers like to know that too, if there's a process that you have to go through, or can it be challenged, or have you done that in the past with, you know, with companies that has done that on land that we control, but you have access to it, as though we are the gatekeepers, but you are the landlord. So that's what I am concerned about. So could you help me answer that question?
I don't have any experience with it. Danny, you know something more?
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but generally the way the real estate side of the Army Corps works is Natalie, or before her was Ahmad, would say the engineers have designated X area or land that they needed, and they would then submit a letter to us stating they need this much land, and then we would then go out and, I mean, it would be surveyed and everything, and then we would have to go out and acquire it. The Army Corps doesn't go out and get land. We are the real estate agent for the Army Corps. The Army Corps designs it, and I mean, I'll give you the background. The land that's located south of the levee between Grant and Chase Street. That's your question, right? I mean,
right.
Without mincing any words. So the question becomes, if you needed that land in the future, even though you may not need it now, how does that go? And I'm assuming that the description that I am explaining is how they normally do it, because that's how they did it with us when I was here back in 2010. They give you a diagram and they say you go get it, and then we get credit for the land that we get. So there's a value similar to, you know, Griffith Golf Center, which is what we're working on now, which is probably the most pertinent information. They say we need X amount of acres from Griffith Golf Center. We go get it appraised. They review the appraisal to make sure the numbers are right, and we go get it.
Well, the question I'm really looking at is this, is that the caveat that's here. If a developer puts up a million-dollar building, and 5 years down the road, the Army Corps of Engineers comes in and says, look, we need to run a path through the center of your building, and we're going to, you know, take it over. And I just wanted to know, I mean, can you do that?
So at this point, we already know what real estate we need, so we wouldn't be doing that for this particular project. I mean, that's okay. Why at the beginning of each project, we'll do a real estate plan, so nothing like this would occur, whereas you would know in advance what lands are going to be needed for the entire project. So we would do that in the beginning. So we wouldn't necessarily have you at the last minute go and say, just acquire this. Well, we would I can't envision that we would do something like that. We would, you know, work around. I mean, if it's something that, again, we would have a plan in place prior to something already being.
Mrs. Mills, to build on that, has it been your experience that events elsewhere in the country change the perspective on how the Corps looks at their projects across the country?
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
So in answer to in response to that question,
yeah.
Is there like a, and maybe you said something to this effect or someone from the Corps, I think we had a question about additional information that was added to our report. And we said, can that information be included in a different, you know, a different document? What was that, Dan? That was the report that we got back, and there was additional information as if we were not in compliance a couple of months ago. The inspection report. Yeah. So the question that came up at that time was, the way the colonel or whoever was standing before here said,
Bill.
It must have been Bill,
yeah.
Said, every so often we do some type of an evaluation, I guess, and we share what that evaluation is, and it's nothing that you guys, it doesn't discount you guys from what you've already met, but nonetheless, it was on the report at that time. But in follow-up up to that, is there like an evaluation review period that every so often you guys do to reassess the existing project, such as this one or other ones around the country, to say, from a forecast standpoint, 5 years from now, and maybe you're just saying this in your office internally, but Little Cal, Grand Cal, whatever it is, wherever it is, we may need to consider expanding our borders in that area. Or is that some type of a logic that you guys use or some type of a system of evaluation that you have in place?
So on a 5-year basis, we look at the project and see how is it performing, you know, beyond the inspection report. How is it performing? We look at the inspection report, but we'll look at any events that might have occurred or if any changes need to be. So yeah, we do look at that. It's a 5-year schedule.
Okay, so if one of those anomalies was we're currently at the 200-year flood level, and because we were at once upon a time, right, at the 200-year flood level, but now we're at the 100?
No, we're at the 200.
Okay, we're at the 200 now. Mm-hmm. Okay. We've always been.
That's the project is authorized at the 200.
Okay. But if you reassessed it and reevaluated it and you said, look, we need to be at the 100-year flood level.
That's a huge thing.
That's a major undertaking.
Yeah, that's going to Congress, and we have to get approval to do something like that. We can't just decide at our level that we're not going to do what Congress authorized us to do.
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of authority. So we have to go back. And I don't remember if you all remember when we had to do that post-authorization change report some time ago to change the cost. It's a really long process. And it takes a really long time. And not something ideal.
Okay, but that's sort of separate.
It's the effort that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's sort of separate, moving it from the 200-year down to the 100-year. But from the evaluation standpoint, you guys do look at every 5 years. You're evaluating every 5 years.
The entire system, how is it performing? Correct.
And so there could be the possibility that you say, you know what, we're at the 5-year point. Based on what all the events that have occurred, including the one from last February, maybe a few anomalies in between then. Based on that, you look along the system and you say, maybe here we need to make a change, or maybe there we need to make, is that what you guys essentially do?
We could. We try to stay within the parameters of what's already set forth, what's already authorized, so not necessarily to expand the scope any further. But you're right, that could be something, depending on the phase of the project.
Yeah, I mean, just during the annual inspection, what they do is they give us guidance. So I think the last one was Katrina, or maybe it was something else, where Bill will come, not necessarily Natalie, but Bill and Natalie both through a joint message say, look, guidance has changed throughout the Corps as far as how you must update your pump stations or how the gates must be drawn or how often you do the maintenance or schedule maintenance. It may be 5 years, it's now 3 years. Or the setbacks, and that was the latest one that I think I remember, is it was 10 feet, now it's 15 feet. So that's what we get, and so more to you, like you're similar to what you're saying, is there are events that happen during not only our system, but the ones, say, down in Houston or New Orleans that, I mean, I'll say Corps-wide,
right.
Their guidance comes down and says, and they say to us, okay, now you put it on your schedule for this, but now you must change. And so, not so much as I have seen, because it's congressionally mandated that we're 200 year, but as far as some other guidance, that has changed along the way. And I wish, I can't think of one besides the 10 to 15 foot, but there were others regarding pump stations and gates and maintenance have all come to us.
Yeah, so reliability, from a standpoint of reliability, whether it's protecting all of it, all of them are, so to speak, protective devices, but the more redundancy, I suppose, that you have, or more reliable gates, or all of these things are things that you would do first before you would move the, you know, needle from the 200 flood your level down, because that's what the failure finding interval is basically saying. You're going to move it from a major, from where it is now, status, but to a much more major severe chance that an event major enough can happen that you need to put in more protection, so to speak, into the system. Mm-hmm. So, but again, the answer to my question, the whole every 5 years thing is was the answer that I was looking for. And again, with that, you would make sure from a reliability standpoint that that may mean checking the system more frequently. That may mean you guys come out instead of annually, you come out semi-annually and you know, or quarterly. But, you know, you're doing more to make sure that the system is more reliable from a reliability standpoint.
Sure.
Okay.
Natalie, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Dave, I heard Dave's question and I heard your response and some other responses. And I'm not sure that there's clarity in everybody's thought process. His question, I believe, was that if we have property that we've already acquired for the project and is currently not utilized, but we own it, we have possession of it, it was acquired as part of the project, and we decide that we're going to enter into an agreement with somebody and they want to put up a building on this property, and they go ahead and they put up this building. I think David's question is, what would your process be, since it's part of the project, to condemn and retake the property? How does that
work? First, if it was acquired for the project initially, and then there was a building that was supposed to be placed, you should have received a permit from us to be able to do something like that. Those 408s that we stand of all the time? Oh, am I not?
It's confusing because she's thinking that it's inside the project. This property is located outside the project.
Okay.
And it all really goes back to how I explained the real estate. If they needed it, they'll direct us to purchase it.
Well, we already own it.
Then it's up to us and how we resolve that issue.
But are we using it for the project?
Currently, no.
No.
It's being farmed.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think the difference is that, you know, to make it a little bit more straightforward, the Little Cal Commission, of which we sit on, is the local agent. They're our federal project. If they set the mandate, we're the ones that have to spend the money and do the work to meet their parameters. Straightforward enough?
It's pretty straight.
So, they don't have a process other than tell us what to do.
I wouldn't say quite like that.
Is that too straightforward?
I wouldn't say those words.
It's being recorded, so yeah, it's good that you said that.
No.
Okay, any other questions for Mrs. Mills?
That's it. I'm
not satisfied. No, but I am going to look into it. What is the process for eminent domain? I'm going to take that back to real estate. I don't know the exact process, but I'll find out and I'll share it with you all so everyone can know what our process is for eminent. Because we do have one, I just don't know it that well.
And the reason for my question is that I am definitely concerned for those individuals, developers who are putting up their hard-earned money mm-hmm. and their dreams to go ahead. And if they put up a facility and they create jobs and economic benefit for the whole community, I just hate to see the Army Corps of Engineers come in and says, look, 5 years down the road, you guys got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to hurt all of us. That was my purpose. And Tom Gazdecki was getting right on it. Thank you. That's what it's about.
Okay.
If I get an answer to that, I think they need to know too.
Sure.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Mills.
Thank you.
All right. Moving right along. Next up, other issues, new business.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have.
Hold on a second.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom.
New business. I think we have on the agenda to address a few things. I'd like to make a motion that the commission reject all bids received on December 19, 2018 for Indiana Bridge number 143 on Kennedy Avenue and re-advertise the project based on a modified design for bids that will be due on February 13, 2019 at 12 p.m.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay.
I alluded to this during my previous statement, was the fact that when we opened them on the 19th, the engineer's estimate and where they came in, which is...
Up December.
If you took the best of both worlds, which both proposals had alternatives, you're looking at $9.2 million, which is far greater than what we have available for this construction. So during the Christmas holiday, ourselves, DLZ, worked to reduce and modify the design. So they're working on doing that right now, and then our hope is then to have those ready, and we will have them ready, and then accepted into our office on the 13th.
Any other discussion? Either or none, there's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellano.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Lamont Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve a Memorandum of Understanding with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, also known as IDNR, for monitoring of the Hobart Marsh Mitigation Project for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th of 2021.
Second. Second, Mr. Repay.
Under the initial statute that created this commission, the commission was not allowed to own property outside of 1 mile radius from the levees. So when this land was purchased, it was purchased by DNR with the understanding that DNR would then use this land for the mitigation that we needed to do because of the federal project had disrupted natural areas. And so this is one of the areas. This is 360-some acres. And then there's the in-project mitigation, which is, I believe, 50 or 60 acres off of Chase Street. So what we need to make sure of is, and not, I guess, revisit what previous boards have failed to do, is to make sure that this area doesn't go to waste or go to seed. So this person will be responsible for monitoring this area while it's still being constructed. They still have 2 years to construct it, but to build this person up, to get them acclimated, to monitor, to make sure that this area is done properly. And we were approached by DNR. We knew this was coming. I mean, this has been talked about for since I started here about this was going to be a day that we were going to do the mitigation, and those folks from Hobart know that this was going to be happening, and we're happy that it is happening, but we want to make sure that the, what is it, $5 million that we invest here does not go to waste. And so this is our partnership with DNR. They're going to pay for half of the individual we are going to. And the reason why it's only 2 years is because it's subject to funding on their side, which is only done for a two-year cycle.
And when did we acquire as a commission this land?
Great question.
It was before the flood, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It was because it had to be designated, because the land had to be found and purchased and available so that when the mitigation was to occur that we had it. It was a part of the real estate that we needed to do because of the fact.
And we're still cleaning up.
We're still cleaning up 30 parcels.
10-4. And this is to help make sure it stays in its natural form and doesn't turn into another Fragmite farm like everything else.
Correct.
Okay. Good luck. All right, great. Any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Mr. Repay, the amount of $60,000 that's allocated for it, we're making allocations to DNR sometime this year and then again next year?
Effective after July 1st or 30th. I'm not sure. I forgot what their
first.
July 1st. With their fiscal year is July 1 to June 30th.
Okay.
So we would then submit the 30 this year at July 1, and then the next would be 30 for July 1 of 2020.
Okay. And during that period of time, do we get some type of a update report?
Well, I would utilize that person along with Derek as well, as far as to be able to make sure that what's happening out at the Hobart mitigation site is what should be happening and that we have no issues. That person will be considered the expert, probably besides Derek, as far as what is happening and what needs to happen, because it will be a person that will be very familiar with this type of activity.
Are there a scope of metrics that Army Corps would have that we would need to abide by to make sure, from a preventative maintenance or custodial maintenance, that we're meeting that performance metric?
And I'm not sure how many thousand of acres you guys manage, the DNR manage, but they have that. And when you have the certain plantings that we have out there, each one is designated and designed to have a certain way to control it, whether it's burning, whether it's clearing, or however, you know, the methodology. And I know Derek early on, before even Derek was on this board, when we had to go through the controlled burns and what you would put as a controlled burn, because some of these areas that we are managing out there are very close to I-65 and 53rd Avenue, which if you try to do a controlled burn out there, you know, you're highly dependent on the wind, and you don't really necessarily want the wind to be either going east or west, because you sort of knock out I-65 into a smoke screen. So that's a lot of the management, making sure that it's clear of debris and, you know, hopefully no vandalism or abuse out there.
That was all, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions on this one? Either none. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Lipinski?
Yes.
Tom Vazdecki?
Yes.
Derek Nimitz?
Yes.
Dave Castellano?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
No. I mean, I'm sorry, yes.
William Baker?
Yes, ma'am.
I made the motion.
It's okay.
It gets worse, by the way. All right, moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make a motion today to extend the licensing agreement with My Energy LLC for an additional 6 months.
Discussion.
Hold on a second. There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion?
Yes, there is a discussion.
Okay,
there's a representative from the Maya group here. Before I extend my vote, I'd like to hear from them about the project.
Okay, so he'd like to hear somebody. Is there any other discussion before we bring anybody up?
Is there a representative from Maya project to come up and to discuss the project?
So what I don't understand. There's a motion to extend, and you want to talk about the project?
Well, I was waiting for a particular person to come up and talk about the project before I make a vote on it. That's it.
Okay.
And evidently, the person does not want to come up to the mic.
Okay.
Come up to the mic, Mr. Garcia?
So,
or Mr. Hesse?
So individuals that are here.
Okay.
Okay. So what are you trying to understand?
Just trying to get a complete understanding of the Maya project before we make a vote.
Okay. So the vote is just on what we had originally done in 2015?
Well, yeah.
To extend that agreement?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any other comments?
Mr. Repay?
From a paperwork standpoint, you extended it 6 months ago. The extension expired as of today. So at this point, you extend it, you give them 6 months. They requested coterminous with the permitting. They asked that for previous applications, and we rejected. My understanding is the city and the company are having discussions. That's all. And we're not stopping anything on this property. We are continuing to farm on this property until those issues get resolved, if they do.
And the contingencies that were in this agreement were the ones that we talked about with Ms. Mills already. That's in there, including also obtaining all local, regional, state, and federal permits necessary to do whatever they need to do on that land is also contingencies in that agreement. So this is basically just extending that to have everybody that is working on it have the time to continue to work on it. Either or on us, but that's what we're voting on.
Mr. Chair, I just want to reiterate some of the comments that I've said, which are, this isn't the location-wise, this isn't the ideal location for this. And I don't know if I'm not an ecologist or an environmentalist. And so I don't know from an environmentalist standpoint necessarily if this area is necessarily the best area geographically, Northwest Indiana, for this project. So I just continue to reiterate that as my comments. Thank you.
Mr. Rupe, if they do not successfully obtain the requirements set forth in the original licensing agreement, it's done, correct?
Certainly not. I don't want to be a practicing attorney, but according to the agreement, if they don't obtain what they are supposed to obtain outlined in the agreement that Mr. Wicklund prepared, then in my opinion, they would not be able to go forward.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else? Got a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Berslutsky.
Yes.
Tom Gostecki.
Yes.
Derek Nimitz.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
No.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
No.
William Baker?
Yes. All right, moving right along. Statements to the board from the floor. Please come up to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and help us move this along. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Pam Eanes, resident of Munster, Indiana. Okay, I just want to talk about the Maya project. On October 16th, Gary rescinded their zoning variance and canceled their permit because Maya was not truthful on their application of what they said they were going to do. Then, on November 29th, this is all according to the Times newspaper, Jimmy Ventura sent a letter to IDEM requesting that they deter the Maya permit. You guys first granted them the license agreement in January of 2017. You've had it extended it ever since June 1st of that year. So for a year and a half now, you've been extending this license agreement. You've had numerous citizens come up here and complain about this. We've had it filled at times. We've had protests on the streets. Nobody sees the reason for this. You know, I look at what you say, Bill, about how you don't, what your mission is here and what the Little Calumet is supposed to be about. And you talk about the maintenance and man-made flood control project neglected. I think that's exactly what you're doing. I think you're going against what your mission is for the Little Calumet River Project. And then now you ask the Army Corps of Engineers today, what happens if they want to take the land back? This is a big shell game that the taxpayers are losing on. First off, we pay for you to acquire the land. Then, Maya Energy or whatever other developer is going to work on the land, they go to Indiana Finance Authority, and they get us, the taxpayers, to give them TIF money so they can build these projects. And then, heaven forbid, we need it back, the taxpayers are paying to get it back again after they built on it. This is a travesty. This is just not right, and I think it's time that you guys stand up for the taxpayers of this of Lake County and this community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Barry Halvorsen. I'm from Munster. I also stand in opposition to the Maya project. What occurs to me is that by continuing to keep the application open, what you're actually doing is removing it from the marketplace to where if there was a viable, more serious potential user of that land, they're still now for 6 months unable to come to you and talk to you about it. It's like a guarantee for the Maya people, and I don't think they've earned it. Conversely, it occurs to me that if you don't renew this, then they could just start afresh and come to you with a fresh proposal. If it's, you realize what's happened here is that they came to you with a clean proposal that once the people that were offering them financing saw it, they realized that there wasn't enough commerce involved in their proposal to make it worth their while. In other words, you can't do the recycling profitably, but you can move garbage in and out of there profitably. So obviously this is something that I just don't agree with your movement on this. Obviously the environmental impact could be dire, and I want to reinforce that I believe your mandate not only includes the quantity of water, but the quality of the water that's passing through all the developments you're doing. So please try and be a little more environmentally aware of this, and I agree with Pam that the people that have been complaining about this are trusting you to make the right decision, and they're watching the IDEM is obviously hesitant to get involved with this because of the inconsistency between their various applications for certification. I would also like, if you wouldn't mind, and you don't have to do it while I'm standing here at the microphone, if you wouldn't mind giving us an update on the status of the other parcel that was currently being marketed as well. And if there's a serious proposal for that, what the cash value of that proposal is and the nature of the project itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name's Terry Stiegel. I live in Highland, Indiana. And I guess first thing I'd like to present to the board is on the Kennedy Avenue Bridge on the east side. I think we forgot one alternative number 8, and that's the ADA kayak canoe launch that I think would be a good opportunity to incorporate that into the project over there between Hammond and Highland, whichever side it works most feasibly on. So I think we need to take a serious look at that, especially since we're going out for bids again. It would be a good time to incorporate this. The one that they just put in Lake Station, I think it was about $35,000. So that's kind of a round figure price tag for that. The next thing I'd like to bring to the board, or the commissioners, is I think we need to look at the sensitivity of the watershed around the Lukamet River. And stay cognizant of that and realize that decisions that we make are going to affect our kids and our grandkids, and we want to make sure we're doing the right things, especially with the situation that we're all aware of, that it's real, is climate change. And environmentally, we need to do some things in a different way, in a better way, because we've spent about the last 120 years in this area poisoning it. And if you look around this area, it's a tragedy on what's happened in certain areas. And I can look at West Calumet and East Chicago. I mean, they knowingly put that in there in the 70s, knowing it was built on a leg smelter, and now you've taken and poisoned all those children over all those generations, and they didn't even know it. So I think we need to take a serious look at what we're going to do with the watershed there, and do it environmentally sound and safe, and realize this is public land for the public interest, and we got to quit worrying about developers that want to come in and take that land away. We got to do what's best for the people here. And then the second thing I'd like to say is I'm a little disappointed that we extended the license agreement for Maya, because it's a known fact that the city did rescind the zoning. It's also a known fact that they pulled back on their IDEM permit, their solid waste permit. We put that on hold with IDEM because of that. And another thing is we don't really know what their financial ability is as far as being able to even do the project. So that creates some serious problems there. And it puts us, the commission, in conflict with the city of Gary and other communities too. They're not happy about this, because you're processing garbage for the state of Illinois. We're not state of Illinois. That land is supposed to be for the interest of the people in Indiana. So let's make sure we do the right things with the land. And then to go along with that, we need to also realize, I do think, it came up earlier, we need to look at some unity here across towns and cities and the commission. And if we look at what's going on in Gary, on the table right now, they have a $600 million project in the works for a biofuel plant in Buffington Harbor. Now, this makes a lot more sense, because if you look at the players that had the financial capability of building this plant, it was in a newspaper. So they have the financial ability, we know, to perform on the situation, because it's BP, United Airlines, there's about a half a dozen players in that are willing to fund the $600 million project in Gary. And to go along with that, there's in Northeast Illinois, where they have this garbage at, okay, they're going to make two feedstock plants in Illinois where the garbage is at, okay, that's going to supply the biofuel plant in Gary. So what I'm saying is there's an effort where this company is taking the garbage where it's being made at, reprocessing where it was made at, and then when they have the finished product, they're going to ship it to Gary, to the biofuel plant, and process it into jet fuel. So that project makes a whole lot more sense than trying to do something like Maya, which puts the commission and the community in conflict and jeopardizes the environmental aspect of that property. So please, in the future, take these things into consideration, and let's do what's right for the community, and realize your decisions are going to affect our kids and our grandkids. And like I said, if you look in Gary, there's already a lot of brownfields in Gary. So there's plenty of locations out there to do other things. And I think the city's also said that they're willing to do something like that in the city, given the opportunity. They're interested in that. But they're not interested in doing it in the location we're at. And when you put things in kind of a floodplain area, kind of where we're down in a bowl, I guess you could say, in a way, because what we've done, we've built a dike to protect it from flooding. So it doesn't make the most common sense there either, with the water tables and all these kinds of things. So we're asking you and pleading with you, let's do what's right for the community, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good evening, everybody. Eric Sprenna, Highland resident, Paddling Association and South Shore Trails. Three items for you. First of all, a belated thanks for cleaning up Deep River. There's not a stick left in the water between the railroad bridge and Ripley. I'm surprised the fisher folk haven't started complaining about that. But from a paddling perspective, it certainly is appreciated, and hopefully the railroad bridge will have better passage under it when it's rebuilt to allow for paddling from the Hobart put into the Lake Station takeout. So thank you for the log clearing work. Secondly, Terry's comment about a paddling access point just east of Kennedy, that would be a mistake. You guys built an equipment ramp right by the visitor center. We've used that for the last 8 years to run our annual Little Cal paddling event. As I have commented before, the silt coming down Hard Ditch is filling in the river, And for much of the year, the little Cal in the vicinity of Kennedy, and even a quarter mile east of Kennedy, is not passable by canoe or kayak in normal summertime low water conditions. If there is an access site to be put in, I would suggest talking to the Highland Parks Department. Their last 2 5-year master plans have included verbiage about putting in an access site at 81st Street. Actually 81st and Liable, and that's a much deeper water location. It'll probably be 20 years before the silt coming down Hart Ditch fills it in that far. Mm-hmm. And the last point is, in reading past minutes, I saw some discussion about the Chase Street bike path and bridge being built. Haven't heard any mention. I was wondering if an update can be provided on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
This will be quick. Doug Stewart, Town of Bay Construction, just concerning the Kennedy Avenue job. Just want to caution the board. Chase Street was bid last year. There's three bidders on that. It was over budget. Threw it out, rebid it. It came in $100,000 higher the second time around. You had two good competitive bids on Kennedy, and unless there's substantial changes on that thing, I don't see the price going down. What I would suggest, if you're interested in some value engineering, have an open meeting, bring the contractors in, and maybe talk about some substantial changes so you have maybe a better idea what the cost is going to be. Otherwise, it could be a waste of time. So it's something to think about.
Thank you. Anyone else? Going once, going twice, moving right along. Mr. Ware, anything to say?
No, sir.
Mr. Castellanos, anything to say?
Oh, just a few things. I just want to say Happy New Year to everybody that's out there in the audience. Looking forward to working with all of you for this 2019. And also just wanted to say to all my fellow commissioners here that it's a real pleasure working with these guys. Even though we have different opinions with each other, we do respect each other, and we do work with each other, and they do have their communities in their heart. And that's one of the things I wanted to say. Also, I wanted to say one thing, too. One of our commissioners is a pond worker, and I've been helping him passing out the applications. So if anybody has any women, any minorities you know, or anybody out there, young kids who wants to get into the apprenticeship program for the armed workers, I have a couple of applications up here. You can take home or give them to anybody. Just wanted to let you know that. And also, stay tuned to our program on WLTH.
Is it your program now?
Yes, it's our program.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
It's going to be on Monday. It starts at 9 o'clock. And one of the things we're going to be doing is that we're going to be having a forum, maybe not this January, but maybe early part of this of February, where we're going to invite contractors to come and let them know what are the projects we have and want them to participate in our projects. So that's one of the things I'm going to let you know that. And I'm sorry because Bill's I can't think of it, but they're in Hammond. But the point I'm getting at, just because we do a better job than him, he doesn't have to get mad. Thank you.
Word speaks for itself. Mr. Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just welcome everyone back into a new year, 2019. We got a lot of work ahead of us. And with the weather, it's always a short amount of time to get it accomplished because you never know how the weather's going to cooperate. So in light of that, we have our projects that we have on the table, and hopefully we can execute them in a timely manner. And I appreciate the updates. Mr. Eric Sprenna always gives us great updates, and they're just invaluable, you know, and not just limited to updates for things that were corrected, updates for things that have been brought to our attention. And I'm not taking anything away from anyone else that gives us those updates. But I just appreciate all the updates that we do receive. Mr. Chair, here's one thing I do want to talk about, and that is some things that carried over from 2018 and 2019. And I know that Mr. Wicklund, our attorney, has been looking into some of those things as it relates to minority participation, sort of a spinoff to what Dave was saying, and Ron looking into when the next applications periods are for the iron workers. But we did have, during the 2018, I had some questions, and some questions were raised, and some discussion was had, which was great and healthy. We didn't necessarily come to probably some decision-making points, but there were contractors that did receive contracts and that did do work, and it's not necessarily clear on whether or not those contractors met the minority participation requirements. So how do we it's on the front end, we say that they need to, but on the back end we don't know what they did. And so we need to, we're not a massive organization or business, but we generate enough revenue from the taxpayers that we can probably do our due diligence to make sure that we have contract compliance. If it were a maintenance issue, right? If it were a maintenance neglect issue, hopefully we'd be all over it, or someone would bring it to our attention. Mr. Eric brings things to our attention, and Mr. Stiegel brings things to our attention, and so when we have, and I live in Gary, and I'm the Gary representative, and Gary tends to be in the paper a little bit more often than most places for what it doesn't do right, and when you have a high unemployment, and you're going to probably have a little bit more crime. And when you have more crime, you probably have more problems. And, you're just in a, sometimes it seems like maybe what some folks might call a spiral to nowhere. But if Gary, as a municipality, contributes the most money to the watershed of all municipalities, and when I look at the contractor and the contractor list over the 2018 period, it's questionable whether or not a fraction of that cost is going back into Gary. So how does that help it from an economic standpoint? There are people that are qualified and qualifiable. Maybe they don't know the iron workers application period, but now that we know that the period is open, hopefully some folks take advantage of that and are able to get in. But to require our contractors and to not do it in a condescending way at all, but to require our contractors in a way of integrity, I think most of us are God-fearing people for the most part. It's one thing Jesus said is the poor is going to be with you always, and one of the reasons he said that was because he knew that everybody wasn't God-fearing, so everybody won't look out for the poor. Because there was a man that crossed the road and went to the other side, and there was a priest that crossed the road and went to the other side, and then there was someone, a Samaritan, who helped the person, and he wasn't even of his background. So how do we get to that point that we make sure that we put it in the contract, and we've been practicing now and receiving money for the last 7 years, going on 7 years, 6 years, I guess, steadily. And we put a minority participation clause in place and adopted the one with the state. We sort of took the step of putting it in our contracts. But how do we get to the step now where we actually know that part of the contract is actually being fulfilled so that we can enhance Northwest Indiana? And that's a question that I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Nimitz.
Nothing to add.
Mr. Wyszlinski. Eric answered a question. They awarded the contract for the bridge last year. and it's going to start in spring at Chase Street.
Okay, the last minute said in December, but...
Yeah, like the contract, they couldn't do any work because of the weather.
Okay.
So they got pushed. So they said spring. I believe you're right. Gary Up was the winning bid. Yeah, and they are a city of Gary contractor.
And hopefully they meet the minority participation requirement. But that was my...
I'm finished.
Mr. Gostacki?
I just want to thank everybody for their comments tonight. Appreciate it.
Mr. Wicklund?
Nothing to add.
Next meeting is February 13th. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh.
There's a second?
Second.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Stay warm.